a knock on the door and the night begins. Pour yourself something cold, baby, cheers to this. Welcome to my house, baby, take control now. We can't even slow down, we don't have to go a while. Welcome to my house, play that music too loud. Show me what you do now, we don't have to go a while. Welcome to my house.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Inside the Ropes WrestleMania Rundown. We have had 7 days, seven podcasts. They are in the bag and you can go back and listen to them for your own pleasure at your own leisure. But this is the big review. The history record-setting WrestleMania is now in the history books, regardless of which attendance number you believe. It's definitely the record setter. And everybody has filed their way out of AT&T Stadium, hopefully a little bit easier than they managed to file themselves in. And WrestleMania is up for discussion. The dust has settled somewhat. The opinions are divided. I've never seen such a divisive WrestleMania. It's been compared to that Batman Superman movie for the way it seems to be splitting a fan base. There's a lot of people on either side of the fence. Where do we fall? Well, that's what we're going to find out. I'm Robert Duffin. I'm here with Kenny McIntosh. I watched it on TV. Despite the fact that the WWE were desperate for me not to, apparently, the network was horrendous. But the live experience will be covered by Kenny, who is at AT&T. And we're going to talk for about an hour now about WrestleMania 32. Kenny, what was the live experience like?
It was good. I mean, the stadium looked great. But the AT&T Stadium is the worst stadium for a WrestleMania I've ever been to.
Oh, wow, really?
By a mile. So we get there at like 3 o'clock and the pre-show starts at 4. We start queuing at 4. We're told we have to queue a specific section, which is like down the street. Like that's how long the line is. We get in. We're on like, when you get into the stadium, you're like on the concourse of like the second tier. So you're like section 228 or whatever. So we're on the second section. No idea how to get to the floor, which is where our seats were. And we finally get to this woman and she says, you need to go to section 228 and that's where you get to the floor seating. We get there and you couldn't move. There was thousands of people. You couldn't get to the bar. You couldn't get to the toilet. You couldn't get to, you couldn't get anywhere. And it was almost like a mob. And there was a section, you know, pointing saying floor seating this way. And all of a sudden, everyone's got loads of people had wristbands on it, green wristbands. And apparently they were what you needed to get into the floor. But like loads of us didn't have wristbands. And then some people were telling us, oh, you need to go back outside to get a wristband. You need to go back inside. But at this point it's 5:15. So we've already missed Kalisto Ryback. We've already watched all the women on the big screen. Lita's already unveiled the belt. People were arguing. People were fighting. People were chatting bullshit. People were chatting, we want refunds. And like it genuinely felt like a riot was going to break out if we didn't get into that stadium by 6 o'clock. I don't understand why they did wristbands. It was stupid because you have a ticket, right? So your ticket would be like, okay, I'll look at your ticket. Yes, you can go on the floor. Do you know what I mean? It's quite straightforward. And the wristband thing was just stupid. Apparently they had to abandon it later on because people were just going absolutely mental because people who are on the floor have paid hundreds and hundreds of dollars for these seats. And I got to my seat at like 6 minutes before the show started, the pay-per-view. So I missed the whole pre-show, the whole 2 hours. And I paid hundreds of pounds for my ticket. And it's just not acceptable. So that was bad. But once we got in and we got to our seat, it was good. I enjoyed myself. But that first couple of hours were fucking horrendous. So AT&T Stadium are the worst by a mile. The AT&T Stadium didn't have any Wi-Fi.
Wow.
The irony seepeth over. They are a terrible venue, terrible security, terrible organization. But luckily for them, the live crowd seemed to enjoy the show, so they kind of forgot about it. But for a while there, it looked pretty bad. Like, we thought we weren't going to get in on time. We thought we were going to miss it. Miss the beginning of the show. But luckily, with 6 minutes to spare, we got in.
Well, that wasn't too bad. Slightly less glamorous, but at home, we tried to watch it on the network, and while watching the pre-show, the stream was really, really bad. And occasionally the live stream just kept cutting to the Mick Foley, Steve Austin interview. I don't know if they were running that as like a sort of B feed to try and test out some stuff, but we never saw it in like high quality image, the pre-show at all. And it kept stalling. In the end, we just ordered the pay-per-view like on Sky Box Office because there was just no way that you'd be able to get through the whole of WrestleMania. With that level of quality, it just would have taken away from it so much. So, and I saw a lot of people posting stuff online saying that their network just straight out wasn't working for a long time. So I think they had a lot of trouble live on the night. So it's a bit of a shame, really. Also interesting to note as we get into the matches that the Wrestling Observer reported today that the finishes for nearly every match were not finalized until 5 p.m. yesterday. And a lot of the production rehearsals, and because a lot of people complained, you wouldn't have seen this, but a lot of people complained about the camera work last night. They said that, you know, they kept missing things, and it was just very like haphazard and not that great, which I would agree with. And apparently that was because a lot of the production steps were skipped because they had no idea what a lot of the finishes were going to be. And apparently, and I'm sure this will not surprise anybody, Kevin Owens was originally supposed to retain his title, and Zack Ryder ended up very, very last minute being put in as the winner. So, interesting stuff, I guess. So you didn't get to see a couple of the matches, so I guess I'll cover them very quickly. Just to let you know that people listening, hopefully, in addition to our sort of relatively shorter WrestleMania review, we are going to have an Inside the Ropes roundtable WrestleMania review. I'll sort of host that with Sondra and David McCutcheon. It might come out after Raw, so maybe there'll be some Raw thoughts. So we'll see. We'll have a sort of more extended show as well, so with different people's opinions on it, and so it'll be quite fun. But in terms of these two matches, obviously you're only going to get me because Kenny didn't really see them. But I thought that Kalisto versus Ryback was perfectly fine. It was an entertaining enough opening match. It was a shame to see so few people in the building, and I thought it kind of sucked for them that there wasn't really that many people there.
Did it look as empty as I've heard it did?
Yeah, literally empty. Yeah. The other thing is because obviously this was also live on USA Network and YouTube or whatever. All the matches on the pre-show had ad breaks right in the middle of them to try and maximize, I guess, the kind of the eyes that were on it. So, interesting. But yeah, you know, they did a lot of big man spots, Kalisto bumping like crazy for Ryback. But it was fine. It wasn't the most decisive finish. But I guess it was what it was, and it seemed to excite the crowd that were there, all sort of 5,000 of them.
Well, we kind of came into the building as Kalisto had just got the victory. So we heard, it was quite a good reaction to that, it seemed, from the people that got to see it. So, say what you will about that, I guess.
Yeah, and then we had the... sorry, guys, my throat is really bad today. We had the 10 Divas tag. Natalya, Paige, Lisa Fox, Eva Marie, and Brie Bella taking on Lana, Tamina, Naomi, Emma, and Summer Rae. The only kind of thing that I honestly really liked was Emma hit like a really badass suplex, and I liked her a lot in this match. But it was what it was. It was really just a showcase to kind of get some characters on that people might recognize from Total Divas and to say goodbye to Brie Bella. Sorry for overemphasizing some words. I'm really just trying to kick my throat into gear. So, it was what it was. We also got the unveiling of the women's title. I'm really glad they did this on the pre-show and not on Raw tonight, actually. I kind of like that they did this in advance of the WrestleMania match. I thought it made sense. I like Lita saying that, you know, these women are so much more than divas. They didn't try to sort of fudge the idea that, you know, we've been calling them divas for a long time. They just out and out, you know, cut it in half and just said, you know, we're going to call them superstars now. And I also liked Renee Young on the pre-show panel because she was like, you know, it's great that, you know, this belt looks like a real title. And then she paused and was like, not that there was anything wrong with the old one. And it's like, it's okay, Vinny. There was a lot wrong with the old one. But yeah, having Lita there to unveil it and let us know that this match on the main card was going to mean a lot more was pretty cool. I guess Usos versus the Dudleys was a match that you did see, so I can finally stop talking. Did you enjoy this?
Yeah, so obviously all I saw on the big screen, I saw the 10 Diva thing on the big screen, and it seemed a little bit like, I mean, Lana didn't do much, right? Did she do much in the match?
No, she did almost nothing.
Okay, and then Eva Marie at one point kind of turned heel on the rest of her team, or on Brie. She wouldn't tag Brie in, and then she like slapped Natalia to tag her in or something.
Yeah, that did happen, yeah.
So, you know, she's basically doing what Roman Reigns should be doing. But I thought it was fine. I mean, it looked good enough to me, and I quite liked the idea. I quite liked the nice touch of Nikki coming out at the end and sort of saying goodbye to her sister. It was quite nice. It didn't disappoint from the stuff I saw on the big screen. It was just kind of, it was a decent pre-show match.
Yeah, it was fine. It was fine. The Usos, the Dudleys. You know,
I saw nothing of this. This was the point where we were in the concourse, sort of like being cattle down towards the floor.
Oh, I see.
So.
Right. Okay. I thought you saw this. It was pretty meh. You know, the Dudleys have spent weeks saying that they're not going to do table things anymore, and then they did do tables because why not? But then the Usos put the Dudleys through the tables in a very rare WrestleMania moment where the new guys got to go over the old guys. But let's talk about that a little bit more when we get into the main card. So I thought the opening video was really good. I don't know how much you saw of it, but I thought it was the best one in a long time.
I liked the video. I liked the whole theme of the show was, you know, the legacy of the company, and is tonight going to be a change? The answer is no, it's not. But it was a good video. It got me excited for the show. Fifth Harmony did not, but you know, I was happy enough.
Yeah, I guess when is that ever really any good? So we opened up as with last year with the WWE Intercontinental Title Ladder Match: Kevin Owens versus The Miz. Versus Dolph Ziggler versus Sami Zayn versus Stardust versus Zack Ryder versus Sin Cara. It was obviously New Gear Night. Everybody was coming out in new clothes, apart from Kevin Owens.
Sin Cara joined the Ku Klux Klan. Nice to see.
Yeah, he looked like a big tampon. with wings.
I was going to say he looked like a pregnancy test, but you know, tampon works.
The Miz obviously had a nice sparkly gold jacket and all that kind of stuff.
He had a great jacket.
What did you think?
I thought this match was really good. I enjoyed it. It surpassed my expectations as a match. I liked it. A lot of it was just kind of the Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens show. That was good. And then it was, so, because we thought that Sami Zayn was going to win it, and then when The Miz was up there, we were thinking, God, The Miz can't be winning it. But then when Zack Ryder got up and he won it, we were just in bafflement about it. Like, Zack Ryder? Like, the guy that, like, hasn't done anything in, like, 3 years?
5 years.
Like, it's 5 years. You know, I will say this about it. The only positive thing I can say is when he won, it was a bit of a feel-good moment for people in the crowd. And his dad came in and they hugged and all. And I'm happy for the guy. I don't have a problem with them pushing him. I just am not so sure they're going to push him, which then makes me think, why give him? Like, if you're going to give somebody the belt to have somebody else win it on Raw, I'd rather you did it with, like, I mean, to be honest, I'd rather you did it with, like, Ziggler, you know, than Zack Ryder. I just don't think Zack Ryder fits. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're going to do something with him. But that was my perspective from the arena. How did it come across on TV?
I really liked this match. I thought it was good. I thought it was better than last year's, despite the lack of star power, I guess some would say. There was lots of cool stuff. Sami Zayn had that great moment where he did the dive through the ladders to take everybody out, and then he ran and did the through the ropes DDT into Kevin Owens, so that was cool. Sin Cara falling through the ladder and doing the sort of pile onto the floor was good, and all that stuff, all that good stuff, lots of good spotty stuff. Ryder winning, I'm just not really all that sure. Like, I'm not really that. I mean, I appreciate what he did a couple of years ago, 5 years ago, with the YouTube show and prioritizing Twitter. You know, at the time, they obviously maybe turned their nose up at that kind of stuff, and now it's their bread and butter, and he maybe deserves some kind of recognition for that. But, like, truthfully, it was a feel-good moment. It was nice for his dad to come in, and yada, yada, yada. So I'm not taking anything away from him, but I just don't really see the point. Like, I don't think he's a great character. I think, like, the whole Jersey Shore thing is, I mean, it was almost pretty dated when he started doing it. Never mind now. I mean, it's really irrelevant now. And I just don't really know what the point is. I think that there are a lot of better performers. Like, if they really wanted to, you know, put the title on someone that fans have maybe felt is not been used properly, then, you know, there's a short list of guys that I would rather see get that spot than Ryder. Like, I know a lot of people like him, and that's cool, and I'm happy for those people who, you know, who got to see him win, but this is just something that I think should have happened 5 years ago. In fact, it kind of did. I mean, people need to remember that, like, Ryder did win the US title at the height of his popularity, and then he just kind of floundered, and it wasn't really that interesting after that. So, I mean, if they're going to make him a sort of cornerstone of this division, then cool, but I don't really believe it, and I think that history might sort of see this win as a bit of an anomaly, but then anomalous wins would be the theme of the night. So,
this was one of the ones which for me became a theme of the night, which was, it kind of feels like I have to watch Raw to have a full opinion of it. Like, is Zack Ryder now going to be pushed? Because if he is, then I guess it's fine. If he's not, then it doesn't really work. Like, and I felt like through the night, there was a lot of stuff that happened where I was kind of like, okay, I guess Raw might explain this, hopefully, maybe. Don't know. But yeah, certainly in the crowd anyway, in the arena, people were happy that Zack Ryder won. And my fears were alleviated during the match that it was pretty much the Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens show, and I was glad of that.
So next up was another strange match, or a match with a strange finish. We had the fourth match between Chris Jericho and AJ Styles. I thought this was very good. I thought it was probably one of their best outings. Nice back and forth. I like the bit where Styles kind of pissed off Jericho by using his springboard dropkick on him. The SI DDT spot that he always does was not his best, but it was still kind of cool to see it getting pulled out at WrestleMania. But I guess what's interesting is that yesterday when we did our prediction show, I feel like there were a number of matches that I actually called and then said, but they would never do that. And one of them was Ryder. So, because I said, you know, he's the bookie's favourite, but that'll never happen. And then this one I said, maybe they'll big league AJ Styles and put Jericho over at WrestleMania just to kind of try and prove a point with Styles. And I really hope that's not why they did this, but I can't really fathom why, unless Jericho is going to be as suspected. Maybe heel Jericho will be one of Roman Reigns' first title defenses. I mean, you could do a lot worse than putting him in with a guy with the experience of Chris Jericho. But I felt a little bit anticlimactic. You know, that Jericho pulled the referee in to sort of stall it, and then he had a code breaker to win. And yeah, I thought it was, I mean, some people said it could have done with an extra few minutes. I thought it was perfectly long enough, to be honest. I kind of feel like Jericho's becoming a bit of a mini Triple H, where he sort of feels like he has to, you know, labour out the matches. But yeah, I don't think this was bad at all. I really enjoyed it, but I thought it was a bit of a disappointing finish.
Well, the thing is, like, again, Jericho likes to do the sort of slow pace of the first half of his match, which I'm not really a fan of. I mean, it's just, like, I still go on about how I didn't really like the way he did that with Punk at WrestleMania 28, but, you know, some people liked it. I thought this was probably their second best match they had. I think their best one was probably the one on SmackDown.
Mostly because of Mauro Ranallo's commentary, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought this one was really good. The finish was very shocking. And again, I'm not so sure that AJ is maybe not going to do something on Raw tonight with Gallows and Anderson.
I see.
Maybe that's because to me it was kind of like that. Maybe that's why the Jericho thing happened. Maybe it was to serve two masters. Maybe it was, you know, he's going to be paired up with the Bullet Club, and then Jericho's going to go and work with Roman. Maybe that's the plan. But it was a strange finish, and again, one of those ones where I thought, I can't, need to see what happens on Raw before I have a full opinion on it. But I'm not like throwing my toys at the pram because Chris Jericho beat him. But I just hope that there's more to the story than
I even thought it was a possibility, but I don't know. I just feel like WrestleMania maybe shouldn't always be. I feel like this is a WrestleMania that is going to rely the most on Raw, and I'm not really a fan of that. I kind of feel like WrestleMania should finish stories.
Yeah, WrestleMania should be the end of your stories, and then you start again the next night for the next year. That's how it used to work.
So Maria Menounos was backstage in one of the very few backstage segments the whole night, really. It was mostly all in the arena. Interviewed Zack Ryder. He was like, oh, I met Scott Hall once when he had his IC title and I got a photo, and now I'm going to get a photo with him and hold my IC title. Cool. Good for him.
Yeah, it was good.
So next up, it was New Day versus the League of Nations, but they said it was, they advertised it as 4-on-3, but it was not. Wade Barrett is definitely in the doghouse because he was just on the outside the whole time. New Day got a pretty cool entrance. They came out of a giant box of Bootios, which made me laugh because when it fell over and all the cereal fell out, I thought, oh, they're not in the box though, are they? Because that, like, they couldn't possibly, how could they work that? But they were, and I really loved it. And they had the Saiyan armor from Dragon Ball Z, which made me laugh. I just laughed the whole way through the entrance. I thought it was pretty spectacular. I liked that everybody sort of thought it was something about unicorns, and then they did the Bootios thing, which I liked.
When we were in the arena, they actually brought the Bootios cereal up onto the stage before the Jericho AJ match had finished.
Oh.
Which was really distracting.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Because you just seen this whole... Now, they weren't in the cereal box, just to clarify. What actually happened was the cereal box was moved to the middle of the stage, and then like some sort of like mechanism, like wires or something, knocked the Bootio box over on its side, and then the New Day ran out from the back into the other side of the box and came out the other side as if they'd come out of it.
Right, okay, that makes sense.
I know, I feel like I'm killing the buzz now of the magic of how it happened, but yeah, that was how it happened. But one of my favourite parts of the entrances, and I thought New Day's entrance was great, but Rusev kicking the Bootios,
yeah,
was just
made
one of my
me
favourite
laugh
things.
So much, because when we went back to when the camera went back to the stage and the Bootios were still there, they didn't, and I was like, oh, the League going to have to walk through them? And then I just saw Rusev like just burst through them and like kicking them everywhere and looking all angry, which I just loved. I thought that was perfect. I thought that the match was all right. I mean, it was about as good as anything else this combination of guys have done. But that's not really what we want to talk about, I suppose. Again, I said in the predictions that given the way that the League have never won against the New Day, like, it would sort of make sense that they win here. But then I said, but there's no way the New Day lose at WrestleMania. They're the big hottest act in the company and all that kind of stuff. And then I should have trusted my gut. And League of Nations did get the win. And then they said that there is no other three-man team in the history of wrestling that could possibly come out here and defeat us. Little did they know. Little did they know. So Shawn Michaels came out in his wrestling
gear.
In his wrestling gear. And I have to say, before WrestleMania, we watched the Shawn Michaels Undertaker match. And I swear, like, Michaels looks just as good as he did when he was wrestling. Like, he could come back. And
he looked as if he just walked off WrestleMania 26, had a shower and come back out.
Yeah. I was like, what? I couldn't believe how good he looked. So that's, yeah. Wow. And then Mick Foley joined him. And by that point, I think it was obvious that that Stone Cold Steve Austin was going to be the next guy out. And he was. And the three of them walked to the ring in a rather, you know, surreal moment. And then they attacked the League of Nations. And then the New Day tried to dance with them. Everybody was kind of into it. Shawn Michaels twerked. Mick Foley did a hip thing. And Then Austin teased, and what I genuinely thought was hilarious, teased dancing with Xavier Woods, like sort of doing this sort of side shimmy, and then obviously kicked him in the gut. Wham. Stunner. Because that's what he does. And the... Yeah, and I guess the sort of attitude heroes, the legends of that kind of era, get a standing tall moment at WrestleMania. This was pretty divisive. So, what did you think?
This is the one that I really liked, and I don't really understand the argument against it. So, the New Day and the League of Nations was a decent match. I mean, it wasn't a great match, but it was fine. League of Nations get the win. I mean, the thing with the League of Nations is, you know, they're the lads, they're not a huge faction. You know, it's not that they're the Wyatts, but that's a really bad example. It's not like they are the Shield or anything. So I think it was okay to do the kind of Legends thing with them. And I think that when you actually look at it, Rusev was like dominating Steve Austin for a couple of minutes, you know, before the inevitable stunner. So, like, they got stuff in.
Austin likes him, so it makes sense.
Yeah, and then the thing with Xavier was, like, if Steve Austin had just danced, people would have been complaining far more than say, you know, than say, oh, he stunned Xavier Woods. You know, he didn't stun the whole New Day. He didn't make them look like chumps. He just gave Xavier a stunner, and that was the end of it. I thought the segment worked. I thought it was really good. I thought Mick Foley looked great. A major props to him. I know he lost like 50 pounds in weight, so good for him. I really enjoyed it. What did you think? Did you enjoy this segment?
I mean, I had a little bit of a back and forth with former guest of the show, Brian Maxwell Mann, on Twitter during this, because he tweeted after this, which was strange because I feel like his tweet would have been more appropriate later in the evening. He said, does everyone remember, or something along the lines of, does everyone remember that great WrestleMania moment when Roddy Piper, Dusty Rhodes, and the Macho Man came out and beat up Steve Austin and The Rock? And then I tweeted him and I said, but, you know, to be fair, Brian, who was The Rock and Steve Austin in that segment? Like, there wasn't really a Rock or a Steve Austin. So the only thing I would say is that I think that if they'd thought about it, they could have done this a little bit better, because effectively, one of the hottest, if not the only, like, the hottest act in the company in terms of not something established elsewhere. Like the New Day is a WWE original, and it's not like an indie guy that everybody loves, or, you know, it's something that they tried to get over, and they did. They gave them a loss at WrestleMania just so the League of Nations could win to then be attacked by these guys. And I just think, well, this is just minor. It doesn't really matter. I mean, I enjoyed the segment enough. It was cool. But, like, you could have had the New Day win so that they get their WrestleMania win. Then the League of Nations beat them up. And then the guys came out. And then you do everything else exactly the same. Like, I kind of feel bad. I don't know if the New Day deserved a WrestleMania loss just to get these guys into the position that Foley, Austin, and Michaels could beat them up. But yeah, I mean, people were like, oh my God, they buried the New Day. And I'm like, no, they didn't. Like, they beat up the League of Nations, who are a bunch of jobbers. And, well, they're not really jobbers at all, but they are for this, effectively. They're not an important stable, like you say. Individually, they could all be contributing a lot more, but, you know, whatever. It's just, you know, you can't complain about everything. And then, yeah, Xavier got the stunner, because that's what Austin does. Like, that's Austin's been his gimmick since 1996. You know, even if you're the babyface, like, I mean, at one point I thought, Jesus, he's probably going to stun the New Day and Michaels and Foley. Like, that's the kind of thing that Austin does. So I didn't really mind it so much, and I think the New Day, that was one of those ones where when people say, you know, oh, just them being in the ring was good for them, and I agree with it here. Needless to say, I don't agree with it elsewhere, but I thought this was fine. I enjoyed it. but yeah, I think maybe New Day could have won and they could have still done the same segment just to not have the League of Nations win anything ever. But it just kind of makes them more charming if they never win. Then we had the no-holds-barred street fight, Dean Ambrose versus Brock Lesnar. I think it is fair to say that this is, given the fact that it was one of the most hyped matches of the night, it's maybe one of the least successful, in that I don't really see many people talking about it other than to say they were very underwhelmed by it.
So yeah, it's funny, with Brock Lesnar and Dean Ambrose, I was perfectly fine with how it went last night. I think it certainly could have been more exciting or more You know, but I think the big problem people have is like, oh, well, Dean Ambrose didn't get more offense in. But the whole build has not been that he could do, get any offense in. The only way he could is to use the weapons. And he used the weapons, and then the weapons kind of got used against him. You know, so he used the chairs, and the chairs got used against him. He used the bat, and then it got used against him. So, I mean, for me, I think that Brock Lesnar was the more important person to come out of this. The way he did going in, because he's not been defeated since 2013, and that should be a big moment, and it should be with someone that they're going to capitalise on it, and I don't think they're going to do that with Dean Ambrose. The only complaint I have is I would have liked to have seen Lesnar sort of endorse Ambrose at the end a little bit, which they didn't do, which I think was a mistake, but I think the match will probably be forgotten pretty soon. In terms of, like, with this card, there's so much going on. I think the Ambrose and Lesnar match just kind of fell by the wayside, which is weird because I actually think the women's match ended up being, like, the third main event rather than this one.
Yeah, this was... I actually think that of all the things that, you know, so many people are often calling for the heads of the WWE creative team, I think when you have a match involving one of your most highly paid stars... and a guy who the crowd were so hot for, they wanted to see win the world title at two different shows so far this year, the Royal Rumble and Roadblock, and you booked them in a match that, you know, 12 hours removed from the show, no one is even talking about, then maybe you do deserve to have your heads on a plate. Because I'm not in any way angry about this, because I think ultimately the result was correct. Like, I think Brock should have won, but... given how much they hyped this, as this was going to be, like, utterly barbaric, it was pretty tame. It felt incomplete or unfinished. There was a lot of discussions online about if there was time cut. I just don't think that at any point Ambrose was booked to look like a threat. I don't think he did get enough stuff in. And I think that the whole point for me was, I thought the whole story they were going to tell was that, yes, Dean Ambrose could not beat Brock Lesnar in a wrestling match, but in a street fight he could come really close. But ultimately, Lesnar's the machine. Lesnar will beat him, but Lesnar's going to have to, like, murder him to beat him. And in that way, Ambrose is going to come out of it looking better. And I don't think he did. I don't think Ambrose came out of this match looking any better. I think that, you know, he got beat with one F5. Yes, it was an F5 through a pile of chairs, which was a very cool spot. And I liked it, but he didn't often look like he was in any way a threat to Brock, and this kind of felt like a match that could have been on one of those network specials, or dare I say it, like a Monday Night Raw main event. Like, it just did not feel like an event whatsoever, and I just think that it's not a major thing, but I think that if you've got a guy that the fans love that much, and he's booked against one of your undoubtedly top stars because of how much you pay him, and you just don't really nail it, then... that kind of feels like a bit of a, like, you dropped the ball a wee bit for these guys. And it just felt like a half-time, sort of, not even halfway main event. You know, it just was another match on the card. And I just don't really like seeing Lesnar in that position. But I think that at least they didn't try to make this more notable just by giving Ambrose a win for nothing. Because I don't think he deserved to be the guy that went over Lesnar. But I do think he deserved to get more in this match than what he was given. But... you mentioned the women's match. That was what was up next. And I think that from start to finish, I'll go out on a limb and say this was the most creatively successful and creatively fulfilling segment that they put together on the whole show. I thought this was absolutely fantastic. Exceeded my expectations.
Yeah, this was the best thing on the show by a mile. I loved the video package. I loved the entrances. I loved the match. I loved the celebration. I loved that Charlotte retained. Loads of people are just complaining about, you know, Sasha Banks, how could she not win? It's like, people don't have to win their first title match on the main roster, like, within a story. Like, you can tell the story longer and you can make people wait for it. So that didn't bother me. You know, she's like 23 years old or 24. Like, it didn't, but she was treated like a star. I mean, she was out with Snoop Dogg, she had the big entrance. Yeah, I just thought this was... by far the best thing on the show, match of the night, and yeah, just presented really well. I've got no complaints about it, and I've it's the one thing that I've fully watched back this morning that I wanted to check out. There's other things I kind of skipped through, but this was the one I wanted to sit and watch through.
The one thing I thought, like, was the one woman who I was just like, oh, what? That this Raven Phoenix person who sang Sasha's theme with Snoop Dogg? Like, oh, God. Like, I don't know whether it came... I mean, it came across on TV. Like, she was not a great singer. Like, it was very off-pitch. So I was kind of like, oh, but it didn't take away from the whole thing. I thought Sasha's entrance was really cool. Charlotte's entrance was really cool. Becky got a cool entrance, too. Like, by no means the fifth wheel or anything. I thought the match was really great, and I'm with you. I think the finish was the right call. I said it as well. Like, I went with Sasha because I thought that might be what they would in the predictions. But then I did also say that, you know, wouldn't it be really cool if Charlotte got the win? And I think the fact that they debuted the title made it better because she came out with that Divas belt. And if she had lost, if the Divas champion had lost, and Sasha or Becky won the women's title, it would almost be like they were saying, well, maybe Charlotte, you know, was the Divas champion, but no, they are building up a mega heel. They're building the women's division around a mega bitch who can get the job done. And yes, Ric Flair helped her win. And I know some people really hated that because they thought that it undermined what they were trying to do. I don't think it did at all. You're trying to build the division. You're trying to build a division around a heel champion who everybody wants to see get her ass kicked. So on the biggest stage of all, she did a little sneaky cheat to get her win. She did it with Flair. That's her character. It says it on her damn t-shirt. I loved this. I loved everything about it. And I think that ultimately, if Sasha won, I would have felt like it wasn't maybe big enough for her to get her big win because it didn't feel like they had the greatest story. If Becky won, I'd be like, well, maybe she's going to be looked on as like the sort of lame duck winner because she's maybe not the biggest character here. But I think Charlotte winning was, you know, with retrospect, the right call. And I really, really liked the match. And they were presented as stars, as superstars, not as divas. Women's title, and I thought the fact that they put a stadium roof fireworks spot in for Charlotte's win was really great. Like it was, they made stars. That like the whole thing was engineered. They were like, you know, because some people probably went, "Wow, like Charlotte's getting fireworks from the roof." Yes, she is because she is a star. And I think that that was the right decision. And I just wish that the attitude that went into booking this segment was more prevalent across the whole show. I mean, I think some people are lumping this Charlotte win in with like the AJ win or the Ryder win or the League win, where folk were like, "What?" But I thought this was sensible. I liked it.
Yeah, I loved the Ric Flair interference at the end. I thought it was a great match. It was it was definitely the best main roster pay-per-view women's match in years.
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah. They did exactly what they had to do, and I think they legitimised the division in one night, which is what they had to do. And they're not going to call them Divas, which I am all for. I thought it was brilliant.
Stephanie did an interview on Sunday saying about how, you know, they're now superstars, they're equal to men, all that sort of stuff, which is great.
Yeah, I also saw one of my favourite things, I retweeted it, was Max Landis was at WrestleMania, and he was quite near ringside, and he got a photograph. It was really cool. He got a photo of a young girl who must have been maybe like 10 years old, and she was leaning on the barricade intently watching these three women have their match. And he tweeted that picture and just said, "This is why the way they presented that match was so important." And I agree 100%. It's going to inspire a generation of young women to become pro wrestlers. So. Next up, Legacy's on the line. Hell in a Cell. The Undertaker versus Shane McMahon. Shane McMahon. I actually want... The first thing I want to ask you about, because I think this is the match we'll probably talk about the longest.
Yeah.
What did you think? Because I thought... I don't know why, but when this happened, I thought, I bet Kenny really hates this. What did you think of Shane's sons coming out with him in his entrance?
I thought it was great.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think what I liked about it was they were basically saying, they were hamming up the Legacy thing. You know, like he is doing this because he wants his sons to be able to do this. And I liked it. I mean, obviously they weren't around for the match, thankfully. But like, yeah, I thought it worked. I thought it was, on paper, it's something that might not have worked. But definitely in the crowd anyway, like people really popped for it. People thought it was, like, they got a big ovation as kids. And I can only hope that when they grow up, they grow up to be like their dad and not like any of the other family members.
I don't know why. I just thought that. Cause I guess I think of you as quite cynical that you'd be like, "Oh God, the Waynes are out." Obviously, I was really hoping at that point that the big spot of the match was going to be the Undertaker one after the other lobbing his kids off the top of the hill in a cell. But sadly, it was not to be. So yeah, Undertaker got a pretty cool entrance as well. One of his better ones recently. I thought they looked he looked good in his entrance at least.
The hair looked decent.
So, I mean, I don't even really know where to begin here. I guess there's so much...
Here we go. Can I just kind of... Let me just summarise what I think about it.
Go for it.
I had a Twitter conversation today with Ryan Satin, mm-hmm. Pro Wrestling Sheet. And one of the things that we were talking about was Goldberg had been sort of rumoured to be at WrestleMania. And obviously he wasn't. and we had a back and forth about, you know, the difference between reporting something because you've got a legitimate source or rumored things. And like I was saying, I don't really agree with like websites reporting rumors unless it's a rumor from a reputable source like a Dave Meltzer or a PW Insider, blah blah blah. And then somebody tweeted me and said, "Well, what culture does it?" And I was like, "Well, can't win them all." But the thing about oh god, I shouldn't have said that. Anyway, the thing is, one of the things that Ryan had brought up, somebody brought it up through the conversation or something, and somebody said, you know, if people just watch the Undertaker-Shane match with no sort of, like, expectation of shenanigans, I think it stands up as a decent match, as a decent Hell in a Cell. The problem, I think, is that we all sort of imagined our own fun and imagined our own shenanigans and imagined what this could be and that could be in the Balor Club and all these different things. Quite rightly, because we want it to be great. And we imagined all this stuff. And because it didn't happen, it kind of was a bit like, okay, it's just the two of them. And then one of the other things that people were kind of had an issue with was the fact that Shane was able to look so... was able to get as much offense in on The Undertaker. And for me, like when the match started, I was like, you know, I just have to suspend my disbelief here to this. Because if I don't, it's not going to work. So I enjoyed the match for the most part. I know some people were saying it was just the fall off the cage and that was it. I think that's kind of being a bit too harsh on it. I think there are other good spots in it. There are stuff that I enjoyed when Undertaker sat up and Shane started punching him and Undertaker just was like not having any of it. And I liked the spots on the steel steps inside the ring. I liked Undertaker ragdolling him about, sort of spearing Shane through the cell. I thought there was a lot of cool stuff in it. But I think the problem with it, the biggest fundamental problem is that at the end of it, The Undertaker won. And the problem with that is that means that there's no change. And if there's no change, then you've built up that there's going to be and there's not going to be. And that is where I don't get it. Because don't advertise that you're going to make change or you're going to, the product's terrible and the ratings are going down and da-da-da and the authority, you know, because we're all so sick of the authority. And you were hoping that this was going to be the change. And it wasn't, and it kind of sucked that it wasn't. And I think there's a lot of disappointment from people. And it's funny because people were so torn between, do we want The Undertaker to win? Do we want Shane to win? But when Undertaker won, as much as I was happy that he won, because I thought it was a decent match and stuff, it sunk in when he won that, oh, that's it. Like, Shane's gone and there's no change. And now we have the same stuff. And that was kind of disappointing and disheartening. And I was hoping that maybe the main event was going to give me something to offset that, but it did not. So I think I understand people's criticisms of it. I don't think it was the best match in the world, but I think some people in my head or eyes are being a little bit too harsh on it. But I'm curious to how it came across to you on TV without the sort of live atmosphere.
This was... I don't want to be hyperbolic about it because I think that the best thing I ever did on this podcast was when Daniel Bryan retired, said I was never going to get particularly angry about things because, trust me, this WrestleMania was definitely, that was definitely the right prescription for me in some segments. To be honest, up until this match, I was really enjoying WrestleMania and I was so psyched for this show. And I bought into their hype. I bought into my own hype because I was recording podcasts every day and all that kind of stuff. I felt like the, you know, that when you buy like a really nice new pair of shoes and for a night out, and then you're getting dressed to go out, and you put the shoes on, you're like, oh shit, I bought them a size too small, and this really hurts, and you're like, fuck it, I want to look good. And you go out with the shoes on anyway, and you're, you know, by the end of the night, you're walking around in a pool of your own blood, but you're sort of like, it's fine, I still look fabulous. So up until this match, I was really digging WrestleMania. Like, you know, questionable decisions aside, I was really enjoying it. And this was, for me, I'm just saying this because this is how I feel. I'm not trying to say this to, like, stir shit or whatever, but this was my least favorite match on the card, including the main event. And I think that the division between the TV audience and the live audience, this is the match that seems to divide people the most. And that's fine. Everybody's experience is valid. If you were there and you saw it live and you loved it, that's valid. You know, you saw something very different. So, to your point, when this match finished, actually, before this match started, a friend said to me, like, what do you expect from this? And I said, the only thing I don't want to see is these two guys wrestling for 20 minutes on their own, because I just don't think it'll work. And then I saw the match, and it was what it was. And then at the end of it, very quickly, I realized, I said the same thing as Bray Wyatt Undertaker last year. I said, shit, I spent weeks building up my own version of this match, and they've gone in a completely different direction. So they can't, you know, can I really fault them for it? Like, you know, because, you know, can you fault someone for it not being what you thought it was going to be? So I decided then and there that there was no way I was going to do this podcast without watching the match again. So I've seen it twice. I've seen the match twice now. And I watched it again this afternoon, knowing what it was going to be, and the fact that there wasn't going to be any Balor Club or Mean Street Posse or any of that kind of stuff. And honestly, even with a second watch, it's still, I still think it disappointed. I think that's
fair though. Like, whether you, because you said it was your least favorite match, and I understand it. But I think whether it's like, for me, like, I'm saying I quite enjoyed it. You're saying you didn't. But I think both of us can agree it was disappointing.
Yeah, and the reason was is I felt like, okay, so all of the stuff aside, you know, no shenanigans. I just thought that from a creative standpoint, the fact that Vince McMahon's flagship television show was on the line and he did not make any appearance during this match, I thought was creatively unforgivable, especially during the high spot with Shane jumping off the cell. I was just kind of going afterwards, and again, this is just fantasy booking, but I'm kind of going, why is Vince not out there pleading for him not to do it? Like, imagine that character moment where Vince has trashed Shane for a month, doesn't want him anywhere near his company, but still goes out there to kind of, like, be there, because he has to see this, because it's his damn, you know, flagship show that's on the line. Like, why is he, or we don't even see him backstage watching the match. Like, I just can't believe he was not in any way visually a part of this match. And then, I thought that would have been a great moment if he was, like, begging Shane, like, you know, I said all this shit, but you are my son, please don't jump. And Shane still does it, because the stakes are that high for Shane. This is when I'm going to make a lot of enemies. I thought the cell dive was completely pointless. I thought it was, the thing, I was sort of realizing when I was watching it that my problem with the match ultimately was it was too slow. I saw one of our listeners actually said they watched it with his lady friend who had never watched wrestling before, and said something about she thought it was like watching two sloths fight. Like, I think it was very slow paced. These guys are old, so I'm not going to fault them for it. Like, they put in a hell of a shift, and I'm not taking away from what Shane did, because it's a hell of a bump. It's ridiculous. Kudos to him for doing it. But every single person who said to me, like, how could you not like this? Look at what Shane did. I just keep tweeting them or messaging the same thing. Why? Why did he do it? I saw Mick Foley, like giving Shane McMahon props. Mick Foley, who has been on record saying, nobody should do the things that I did. And he's saying, you know, well done, Shane, for doing that. Like, I mean, Mick, and with all due respect to him and his opinions, when he flew off that Hell in a Cell, he was defining a career and defining an era. When Shane McMahon jumped off that Hell in a Cell, he was doing his dad a favor. Because when you remove all the storyline stuff from it, the lockbox that's been forgotten, the change that's not going to happen, you know, I mean, having a character turn up on your TV show for 4 weeks saying, this TV show is shit now, I'm going to make it better, and then they don't win, is like, that's like creative genocide, man. I can't understand. And I can only assume that Raw will do something, but I feel like it has to. But when you remove all that stuff, when he was that sounds so terrible to say.
Do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of, do you remember WrestleMania 25 with Triple H and Randy Orton?
Yeah.
Going into that, we were all like, oh, the McMahons are going to get involved, Legacy's going to get involved, maybe Batista's going to come back. There was all these things we thought was going to happen. And they just had a match.
Yeah.
And it ultimately became forgettable. And I think that Hell in a Cell, unless there is some big fallout tonight, is going to become forgettable as well. Shame, because what they should have done is threw the bells and whistles in, because I would much rather have seen Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin and Mick Foley involved in that and not in the League of Nations stuff, if that was the choice.
I just want to clarify a thing on the bump, though. Like, it was impressive, but it did not impress me, because I feel like I've been waiting for, like, as like slowly as the climb up and the jump was done to kind of build suspense. When he actually did it, like, I mean, I was not in any way like, oh my god, or like on my, or like standing up, like watching the match or anything. Like, I feel like it was like inevitable. I was like, well, this is what he came back for. You know, we all joked on the night that he came back, like, oh, he's just come back to jump off the top of the Hell in a Cell. And then by the time he got round to doing it, it was just kind of like, yeah, like, he did it. And I feel like that makes me sound so snidey, or like, or so shitty, or I'm taking away from what he did. But I just feel like he did it, and I don't think the reasons behind him putting his life on the line potentially were worth it. I don't think it was worth it. I don't think the risk reward ratio was right. I mean, it really felt like a bump for the sake of a bump, to make a match, to make a moment, to pop a crowd, because they didn't really know what else to do with The Undertaker this year. And I felt really bad for Shane, because I think he, in my mind, and I know not a lot of people are not going to like this, but I think he took that bump because Vince was like, we need something. I don't think it really made any sense for him to do it. I thought he risked his own health for no good reason, and I was really quite underwhelmed with the match. But I'm glad people liked it, and I'm not shitting on it. I'm glad people liked it, but it just wasn't my thing. I felt really bleh about it at the end.
I wouldn't be shocked if there was some sort of backstage stuff at play here from maybe Triple H, because this, it just seemed with this match you expected so much more, and you didn't get it, and that's it. It's like, whether it's right or wrong, whether people built it up in their own head or not, like, people expected more from this and they didn't get it. And I think both of them put in a really good performance. I thought totally, Undertaker was really good. I thought Undertaker looked good, you know, moved well. The stuff he does for 51 is amazing. And Shane did really well, but I think they were just two performers who were given a really bad script.
Yeah, I just thought, like, I saw somebody else say about the Shane thing, like, that they thought it was stupid, but they respected he did it. And I'm like, yeah, I'm with that. Like, I respect him for taking that, but I don't think it was worth it. And also, you won't have seen this yet, but this really took me out of it. Some people like this, and I fucking hated it. When he fell through that, when he jumped, Michael Cole's call on commentary was, "Oh, for the love of mankind." And I thought that was cartoonish bullshit. I was like, this guy's just taken that, and you can't even act like, oh my god. Like, you've done quiet voice for, like, Jerry Lawler's anal bleeding, and you do a cartoon, "Oh, for the love of mankind." Wait, like, oh my god, you know what, Michael Cole, yeah, we all fucking know he's the first guy to go off the cell since Foley did it as Mankind. It's just too cute. It was so cutesy. Ugh.
Yeah. But yeah, so let's move on from it. I guess tonight and Raw we're going to find out if there's anything more to it.
I really hope they pull it back. I hope for the sake of Shane's ridiculous stunt that they make it in retrospect more worth it, but I just don't think it was. Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal.
Tatanka was in it?
Tatanka. Shaq, 8 years too late. So strange. Baron Corbin was out there. I didn't even notice until about halfway through the match that he was in the match. I just thought the fact that they put this on so late meant that we were going to be correct about Cena or possibly The Rock being involved in this. But I thought it was probably the worst Andre Battle Royal yet, but I did like the finish. Like, I'm glad that Baron Corbin won it, especially given that I thought he should have beat Austin Aries on NXT TakeOver Dallas on Friday. So, like, good for him. I hope he manages to capitalize on it. I hope he, like, slags off Andre the Giant and tells him to go back to Ring of Honor or something.
Sit down, pig boy. I thought the Battle Royal was fine. It was the buffer match. It wasn't really anything special, but I thought the last couple of minutes were really good. I was shocked that Shaq and Big Show were eliminated, but pleasantly shocked. Because I was like, oh god, is this going to be Shaquille O'Neal winning the Battle Royal? I liked it being Baron Corbin. I think that's a good way to introduce him, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with him.
At this point, right, it's like half past three in the morning, and I'm like, wow, like, they've only got half an hour left, like, to do something with The Rock and the Roman Triple H match. So I was like, well, Rock's getting involved in that match. Makes sense. That's what we all thought. Then the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders come out, and I'm like, right. And then The Rock comes out, and I slowly realize, like, what the hell is happening at this point? Because, now, obviously, they knew they were going to run long. People are like, oh, it ran over. Like, it didn't run over. They knew it was going to be as long as it was. You know, biggest WrestleMania, might as well make it the longest for our sins. But we were sort of worried, and a lot of people watching at home were worried that the traditional pay-per-view might cut out on the hour, and they're like, oh, well, you should have got the network if you wanted to see the main event. But obviously, they factored in that extra hour to their pay-per-view buying time. But so, yeah, then The Rock came out. He had China's big gun, which turned out to be a flamethrower. He set his own name on fire because they had lots of time to waste. Honestly, I was kind of hoping that maybe his baby oil was flammable and he would have gone up. But yeah, look, if you're listening to us for the first time, not a Rock fan. Think Dwayne Johnson's a great guy, great actor. I really like his movies and used to be a really great performer in sports entertainment, but his segments now pretty much just fill me with dread and loathing. So he comes out. He does the same gag he did at WrestleMania 30 about lots of WrestleMania babies. It was about as funny last night as it was then. Yeah, he did a sort of, I guess it was like SNL or something. You know, he was just like, oh, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, if you say yabba, I'll stab you in the eye. Like, I will reach through my TV and choke you. Yeah.
You also forgot the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders were there to.
Oh, no, I didn't say that. So then The Rock announces the attendance, 101,763, which is not actually correct.
But, you know, they always lie about it. It's what they do. I don't get it.
I don't get it. It's so strange because they did. It is legitimately the biggest WrestleMania ever. But because they lied at WrestleMania 3, like 29 years ago, they have to lie now. Like, AT&T released the gate figures. There were just under 94,000 people there. But obviously they boasted because they're such, it's like a pissing contest with them. We'll get 100,000 people in there. They had to make this, they had to count the Jannies or whatever. And I just don't really understand what the purpose is. I'm not slagging them for it. Like, I'm not saying it makes a difference, but I just never understand why they do it. But anyway, so I'm actually going, are you kidding? Like, when The Rock said he was coming to WrestleMania to break records, like, is he actually just going to come out and announce the number? Because that seems like a bit of a waste for the people that maybe, you know, chose to, like, oh, shit, I'm going to WrestleMania now, I know The Rock's going to be there.
Let me talk you through my thought process here. So, yeah, he's like, okay, you know, here's the attendance record. I'm like, oh, okay. And then, yeah, we were kind of like, oh, is that it? And then the lights went out and the Wyatt noise hit. And we were just like, this could be the greatest thing of all time. If the Wyatts are going to come out and destroy The Rock. Because is that what's going to happen? And they come out and the Fireflies thing.
Did you think that was going to happen?
Briefly.
Okay.
Briefly, but then we knew what was coming. So he, you know, they come out. The Fireflies thing in a 100,000-seater stadium is just amazing. Like, it was one of the best things about the show. They come out. And they say they've chosen The Rock, and it's brilliant. And then Rock does comedy, which I don't think worked. And
yeah, he was like, "Oh, you smoke weed, you're fat, you suck on your mum's titties, inbreeding."
Even people around us, people around us were just like, I think the stuff that he does appeals to a very casual fan base, and it's the fan base that will buy the WrestleMania 32 t-shirts and the WrestleMania 32 hoodies and blah 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 blah. And it's funny because I liked parts of the segment and I hated parts of the segment. So just to kind of summarise, the Wyatts end up coming in, Rock all of a sudden says he's going to have a WrestleMania match. Apparently everyone has their gear on tonight. So he has his gear on, he beats Eric Rowan in 6 seconds. Then the Wyatts circle him, and then as the Wyatts circle him, John Cena returns, everybody goes crazy. And it's really funny because everybody was really happy to see him, but they're still wanting to chat John Cena sucks. So he comes out and then they basically kind of take care of the Wyatts. And the problem, like, I don't have a problem with The Rock and John Cena getting one up on the Wyatts. That doesn't bother me. But could Bray Wyatt not have just got one Sister Abigail in on him or done something? Because it just, Sondra said something on her Twitter, and I think it's the best way to describe this whole segment is if you ever wonder why, let me get the tweet actually, because I want to make sure I don't butcher it, because it was very, very good. She said, sorry, let me find it.
No, no, it's fine. It's a good tweet. I know which one you're talking about.
While I'm finding it, I like The Rock, but I think his material is crap. And I just didn't like it. And, I was okay with him doing the Rusev thing a couple of years ago, because I thought it was a one-off, but I thought last night just didn't work. And it amused me that, like, 3 years after they wanted people to buy an endorsement with Rock and Cena, finally they bought it here, 3 years later. But it took, the Wyatts being sort of just tossed aside. And it's funny, I've seen people going, oh, how can people not be happy about the Rock and John Cena with the Wyatts? And the Rock endorsed Bray Wyatt and made him look better. And I'm like,
no, he
listen,
didn't.
I am the guy who is probably more able to speak on this than you and Sondra, because you and Sondra don't like The Rock and don't like his stuff, and I do for the most part, but even I'm saying, no, like, he did not in any way help Bray Wyatt, he made it worse. So Sondra's tweet was, if you'd like to know why new fans have trouble connecting with WWE and don't see anyone as a star, watch that segment. And that's it, that's as true as it is, and again, the problem that WWE have, they've had for years, is that everyone from the past is presented as better than everyone in the present, and that's the problem. And then the only people in the present that they do push as good as the past are the people that the fans don't like. So I get on paper what they tried to do, but it didn't work, and a bit of a letdown.
Yeah, just put it this way, and I'm not you make this comparison to shit on him, but at WrestleMania 32, Zack Ryder won the Intercontinental title, and Bray Wyatt, who 3 years ago everybody was saying was the greatest new character WWE had ever created, didn't have a match, came out, got called, fat and, like, an idiot, and then The Rock beat him up. And I've seen it too, and I know exactly who you're talking about. People that are like, how can you say this? Like, blah, 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 blah. And I was just like, you know what? And again, there's like half people going to be turning off now and never listening back in, but I just think there's a large contingent of WWE programming that feels like it is written for 14-year-olds, lacking in certain areas.
If you enjoyed this, don't ever complain about the Wyatts not being featured ever again.
Yeah.
You don't have the right to.
When Bray Wyatt is expected to headline a match in the summertime, and you're like, doesn't really feel like that big a deal, just remember that you were happy when when we call him part-time's an insult to Brock Lesnar. The sometime movie star came in, called him fat, said he was stupid, beat him up, whatever. And the fact that The Rock's record-setting thing, for weeks, we're going to break records at WrestleMania, was an 8-second match against Eric Rowan. Now, I don't really care that much about Eric Rowan, but he's never going to amount to anything. Sorry, but he's not, right? He's not the best one in the Wyatts. The only thing I think is the greatest thing that happened the last couple of weeks was Luke Harper got injured. Like, Rowan is there to do things like that. That's his thing. He's one of those fucking carpenters that Stan Hansen was talking about on Friday or Saturday. But I just can't imagine somebody who went, oh my God, I'm not going to WrestleMania. Shit, The Rock's going to be there? I'm going to buy a ticket. And, like, that's what you got? Oh, man. Like, I just think that this absolutely stunk and I hated it. And, sorry, I'm really sorry if you liked it and you're angry at me saying this, but I just, honestly, if you like this, then, you know, God help you. But let's go to the...
I think there were good parts to it, but ultimately the parts where it needed a little bit more from the Bray side is where it lacked. And you hit the nail on the head. WWE need big heels, and they can't have them when all the legends beat them up. And somebody said, you know, there's no difference between the New Day, the League of Nations getting beat up, and the Wyatts getting beat up. Yes, there is. League of Nations are not taken seriously, the Wyatts are. Bray Wyatt could be the new sort of version of the Undertaker for this generation. And he's not going to be if he keeps getting beat up by the older guys.
Yeah,
and never getting
beat. In this situation, I'd quote Brian Maxwell Mann and say, like, do you remember at WrestleMania 14 when Macho Man Hulk Hogan came in and beat up the Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin? And I'm like, well, no, actually, you know what? That didn't happen because that would have been dumb. Except for the fact that Hogan and Macho were beating up younger guys who could be stars in another company. That was WCW. I don't really know how that worked out. How did that work out? Oh, yeah. That's what happened when you get fucking new stars. Anyway, I know you need to go and we've already gone too long. World Heavyweight title match was next. I'm not going to lie. This show was too long. I was fucking exhausted. The two folk I was watching WrestleMania with had already fallen asleep by this point. So... this is so long, and then... So, anyway, I just have to give props to one of my favourite parts from this evening, and I liked it because it was so bad, but I think it was meant to be. Stephanie McMahon as Queen Bitch. She looked like Zool. I think she has dogs in her fridge. Like, her big mad hair and her speech, like, oh my god. And the bit that I thought was really hilarious when she went, from this point on, there will be no hope. And I was like, yeah, you're probably right, love, but not for the reasons that you think. I loved Triple H's entrance. I thought it was great. Roman didn't really get much of a great entrance, but, you know, I'm used to the fact now that they seem intent to make him look like an asshole. What did you think of the match? Like I said, I hate to throw this in your face, but I said yesterday, I think Roman Reigns is going to win. There's going to be no heel turn. It's going to be a straight-up match. He's just going to beat him, and they're just going to put him over like they want. And you were like, Robert. A year ago, you said the same thing, that they did a cash-in and all this, and it was a great match and all this exciting stuff. Like, you don't really think they're going to do that. And I really hate to say it, but I told you so. But can you believe this? I actually can't quite believe they did it.
No, I can't. I can't.
The crowd chanted for Nakamura, they chanted for Bayley, they chanted for NXT. This is the main event of WrestleMania.
Somebody at one point, people were chanting for CM Punk at one point.
They chanted for Sami Zayn, they did the Ole thing. I just like, oh my goodness.
And apparently, I think they muted the boos on TV, apparently.
Yeah, well, there's a very, very, like, oh god moment where the commentary volume goes down as well, and you're like, oh shit.
But here's the thing, so I thought Triple H's entrance was amazing, but again, it's like, you know, he gets this big, you know, demonic heel entrance, he's got this, like, sexy, evil queen by his side and all that sort of stuff, and then Roman comes out, we punch in the ground.
Do you know what I loved? I said this on Twitter, like, I love that, I'm not making fun, but in the story world of WWE, Triple H and Stephanie are like the owners of a $1 million company who once a year, like, spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on, like, elaborate cosplay. Like, because remember, like, that Stephanie that we saw there with the mad hair, like, looking like she was in a sci-fi TV movie of the week, like, she is still the same Stephanie that's, like, meant to be, like, the owner of the company. And that just, I find that really, really funny. And I like it. Like, I like that, like, that's how conceited they are. That they're like, yeah, we're going to build this big... But then, like, they really tried. Like, the whole purpose of that entrance and that speech was to be like, you need to boot us. There is no hope.
Well,
here's the thing.
Here's the thing. If they were concerned about that, then, you know, Triple H shouldn't have been crotch-chopping his way into this. You know? He knew what he was doing. Here's the thing. I hated this match. I hated it far more than the Hell in a Cell. I thought it was horrible. And I think what was so horrible about it was, with Shane and Undertaker, you can kind of make an argument for, well, you know, it's two guys that we love, and, like, one of them has to win, and then, you know, like, when you think about it, like, if Shane McMahon didn't have any help, then he couldn't beat The Undertaker, so it kind of made sense from that perspective of, you know, Shane was valiant and he tried, and he couldn't get the job done, he lost, right? I get that story. But with Roman Reigns, like, it was like 90% of this stadium were booing him. Like 90,000 people out of 100 were booing him, and they still went with it. And like I heard Brian Alvarez, all he told me that Brian Alvarez had said, oh, you know what, as soon as the pinfall happened, everyone was cheering and staged the fireworks. No, they fucking didn't. There was thousands of people leaving as soon as that pinfall happened because they knew exactly what it meant. It meant that WWE are not listening to their audience, and this guy is not the top babyface in any way, shape, or form. Anyone who thinks he is deluded. Anyone who thinks he is doesn't know what they're talking about. The moment I knew it was going to happen, and I'm sure you did as well, was the moment he hit Stephanie. You knew it was like, right, this is the moment where he's hit her, so you're supposed to get the big pop. And it got a pop, but it didn't get anywhere near the big pop that, you know, if, I don't want to use Steve Austin as an example, but if John Cena had given her an AA, I think the fans would have been far more receptive to that than Roman Reigns.
I looked at that spot in one of two ways. At first I went, oh great, like, what does it say about wrestling fans that the only time they'll cheer Roman Reigns is when he accidentally hits a woman? And then on the second hand, I was like, okay, you know what, if this is what you want to do, right, if you finally want to get, like, Stephanie get some, like, physical comeuppance for basically being an absolute cow for the past 3 years, why, now, this is controversial, but why not let Roman deliberately spear her? Like, it was an accident. Like, he accidentally speared her. Like, you know, Steve Austin stunned Linda or Stephanie or China or whatever. And I know it's so, so morally questionable, especially now. But I think that if Roman Reigns had went, fuck it, and speared Stephanie... I don't know. I'm not saying it's, like, the most morally correct way to get the crowd on your side, but I think... it might have worked, like, if he was just like, you know, screw her, like, she's so awful and terrible and mean as the character, that I just decided to take her out. Maybe not spear her, like, you know, shove her or, you know, just slap her or, oh, I can't believe I'm trying to justify this. I'm not really, but I just thought it was so awkward. Like so many of the things they booked tonight, if it was my choice, I would never have done it in the first place. Like, I would never have put Austin Foley and HBK in that situation. I would never have put The Rock in with the Wyatts. I would never have wanted Stephanie and Roman to have any physical altercation, really. But... like, even when they go for these things, they somehow manage to not pull them off successfully. See if you were just to watch the match on mute. I think there was some good wrestling in this. Like, Triple H was good. Roman was, like... But it was just the wrong story, the wrong situation. And once again...
Wrong cast.
Triple H, once again, stubbornly believing that his epic match style can go 30 minutes in the main event of WrestleMania and enthuse people. He is... 0-3, you know, WrestleMania 18, WrestleMania 25, and this, like, he cannot do that. Like, that's the third time now that he's put himself or been positioned in that main event slot and absolutely blown it because it's the wrong character, the wrong type of match, or the wrong story, or whatever. But I think this was, I'll be honest, I thought this match was better than Jericho. Triple H at WrestleMania 18, I thought it was better than Randy Orton Triple H at WrestleMania 25. I don't think by any means it's a terrible match, but the context is what makes it so bad. And I am, as much as I predicted it, I was genuinely shocked that they just went with it. And I think that Reigns is going to be crucified on Raw tonight.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm so excited. Because here's my thing. I had a great time at WrestleMania, and I thought it was a good show. I don't think it was a terrible show. I know some people are saying that. I would give it like a 6 out of 10.
I'm exactly the same. I'd give it 6 out of 10.
Because I feel like the IC title match was actually really, really good.
It was.
Even if the finish was baffling, the match itself was really, really good. AJ Jericho was really, really good, despite the finish being baffling. The women's... I mean, genuinely, I've never seen something... well, I've not seen something in so long. Maybe since Punk and Cena... where something from the beginning of the video package to the end of the post-match was perfect.
Yeah, it was perfect.
Absolutely perfect. So that was perfect. You know, Ambrose, Lesnar, I get why some people expected more from it. I'm just happy that Lesnar still is sort of undefeated and can take that to a bigger moment. Sadly, I think I know who it's going to be against. And then I thought Hell in a Cell had some good moments, even if the story wasn't played out as it should have been.
Interesting. I was talking to Daniel Bradley about it, and he said that he really liked Hell in a Cell because he was like, well, Shane's not sticking around, it's not happening. Like, he said from the very start of the story, he was like, well, Undertaker's going to win. And so for that, because he was like, you know, I didn't really care about the story, I just enjoyed the match. And I was like, well, I can't divorce the match from a story. Like, to me, wrestling matches are story points. You know, they're points in a story. So if the story's not working, I really struggle to go with it. And I'm gonna leave you with this. I think you might like this. As some people might know, I'm training to be a teacher. And sometimes I have to take kids through how to write an essay. And I have a line that I use every time they're writing an essay. So a bad conclusion weighs more than it's worth, right? I always say to them, always make time in exam conditions for a conclusion. Never just rush end a conclusion to an essay. And I always tell them, like, imagine a movie that you've watched that's got a bad ending. Do you remember the other 90-100 minutes of the movie when you first leave? Or do you remember the bad ending? You remember the bad ending. So as good as other points of this WrestleMania was, and it was a good show, I thought it was probably on par or better than WrestleMania 31. It definitely shat all over WrestleMania 29 and 27 in terms of...
Where I put it is not as good as 30 and 31, but not as bad as 27 and 29. I would say it's kind of... I think 31, for whatever... I think the thing with 31 was, 31 was quite a feel-good WrestleMania. Apart from one very specific instance. But, like, you know, you walked out there with, like, Daniel Bryan and John Cena as the secondary champions, Seth Rollins the world champion, Brock Lesnar wanting revenge, Roman Reigns, don't know what he's going to do. There's a lot of stuff there that you could be excited about. But coming at this WrestleMania, we're all kind of like, please don't let it be Roman versus Authority. Like, please. There is a spoiler that's just come out Monday Night Raw that I'm not going to reveal, but if it happens, it would be tremendous. So hopefully...
Yeah, remember last year that we were calling it WrestleMania Play Button? This felt like WrestleMania Pause Button. It just felt like across the board, like no matter how good some of the matches were, nothing, not very much of it felt like it was a progression. But yeah, as I was saying, just remember that I don't think anybody enjoyed the ending. And the ending is what sticks with you. Like, you need to have a good ending. Like, even the Hell in a Cell being the last match would have probably helped. Like, I know I wasn't a big fan of it, but a lot of people were. So that's cool. But yeah, I hope you at least enjoyed WrestleMania, or at least enjoyed parts of it. I don't think it was the most successful creative endeavor. But then, you know what? This afternoon, I had to remind myself that, I mean, I'm not making apologies for them, because I think that even within their own logic, they made some mistakes last night. But, you know, they were kind of backed into a corner by, well, their own booking in some cases, but also injuries and things like that. So, you know, maybe it was the best that we could hope for, but... honestly, yeah, the Shane Undertaker thing just... Yeah, I guess you just need to really basically not believe anything they were telling you for a month to enjoy it. Like, you know, it was just a thing they put together for WrestleMania, and Shane was never sticking around, but... Who knows?
I thought that overall it was a pretty good weekend. The TakeOver show was excellent. The Hall of Fame was fun, and WrestleMania was a decent show. But it just kind of seemed like it went in the wrong order, you know.
Yeah,
WrestleMania had been a Friday night.
Wrong winners, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, so that's us. We're going to leave you now. Thanks for listening and supporting us through 7 Days 7 Podcast. We're going to be back tomorrow with a Raw review, and then Robert will be with you for day 10 of the 7 Days 7 Podcast with Sandra and David McCutcheon.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm actually going to have done 11 podcasts, because we're going to do a roundtable. To get David and Sandra's opinions on the record. You won't have to hear me wittering on again. I'll mostly just be kind of leading them and probing them and trying to annoy them into saying things. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, thanks everybody for your support and for listening. And, you know, I can't decide whether it's a good thing or a bad thing ultimately, but I get the feeling that after Monday Night Raw, most of the things we felt about WrestleMania may be irrelevant, but we'll see.
Yep, so I guess enjoy Monday Night Raw, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Roman Reigns, the guy with the biggest pecs. Roman Reigns, the guy who has lots of sex. Roman Reigns, the guy with the wettest hair. Roman Reigns, the guy who just doesn't care. Roman Reigns, the guy with a lot of class. Roman Reigns, the guy who will kick your ass. Roman Reigns, the guy who is dressed in black. Roman Reigns, the guy who has got your back. Roman Reigns, the guy with a sweet goatee. Roman Reigns, a good friend to you and me. He will punch you. He will spear you. He will punch you. He will spear you. He will punch you. He will spear you. He will punch you. Leave that! Roman Reigns, the guy who is not that bad. Roman Reigns, the guy whose tattoos are rad. Roman Reigns, the guy has a decent car. Roman Reigns, his cousin's a movie star. And I believe that. Oh, I believe that. Yes, I believe that. Man, I believe that. Oh, I believe that. Yes, I believe that. Oh, I believe that. Don't you? Roman Reigns, he's dressed like a prison guard. Roman Reigns, his promos are on flashcards. Roman Reigns, he's black, sort of, I think. Roman Reigns, I'd like to buy him a drink. He's not the basis for Metallica. 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 That's Robert Trujillo at Roman Reigns.